When news broke last week that the FBI was searching Mar-a-Lago, it took Ankush Kardori a few minutes to process the headlines.
Honestly, it was momentarily surreal, truly.
Ankush writes for a couple of different news outlets now, but he used to work for the Justice Department. He's gotten used to the agency's cautious approach to Donald Trump. So he was stunned when reporters confirmed that the DOJ sent federal officials to retrieve classified documents from the former president's home.
Is this really happening? It's so, you know, assertive and unexpected, but it was crazy. It was really crazy.
Now Ankush is trying to slot this piece of information into the bigger picture of what we know and what he knows as a former federal prosecutor himself.
It's like endlessly vexing because you get these kind of data points, but then you try to say, okay, if I were prosecuting or investigating this case myself, like what is the full gamut of information that I would want or need to kind of reach some sort of informed decision? And it's always way, 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 way more than is publicly available.
What's publicly available is that there's a whole constellation of investigations into or related to Trump, both his administration and his business. But the signal-to-noise ratio is what concerns Ankush when it comes to these open inquiries.
Because they really are kind of all over the map in varying stages of progress and sort of public obscurity and being conducted by various people. And I think there's a lot of smoke. I suspect a lot of people have not been able to follow the ins and outs and the differences between all these things closely. And there are, you know, meaningful differences.
The search at Mar-a-Lago felt like a familiar moment to Ankush, an opportunity for federal prosecutors to engage with the public about their approach to the former president. Ankush worries that this opportunity is slipping through prosecutors' hands.
There are often these pops of news. We get a little bit, and then all of a sudden there's a huge vacuum and it's filled in with all of this speculation for weeks, if not months. I just think in these times, historically, it's been a very sort of perilous time for, I think, earnest news consumers. And I'm afraid we're maybe in the middle of another one of those periods.
Today on the show, Ankush Kardori is going to shade in some of the context that Justice Department officials are so hesitant to explain when it comes to the potential misdeeds of the former president. I'm Mary C. Curtis, filling in for Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ankush Kardori doesn't begrudge anyone being a little breathless in the wake of the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago. It's a big deal.
The fact that there was a search of Trump's home, it is historically unprecedented. And I think understandably attracts a lot of people's attention because obviously we've had, you know, at least one presidential candidate actively under investigation in a campaign season. That was Hillary Clinton, whatever one makes of that investigation, right? But there was nothing as dramatic as this. This is more intrusive than any law enforcement action, so far as I can tell, that's ever been taken against or concerning a former president, regardless of whether or not he's charged or not.
Could you remind listeners, because they probably forgot, what was the significance of the Hillary Clinton email saga? And how does that relate to the law at the center of the classified documents taken from Mar-a-Lago?
Obviously, we all went through a very public saga involving Hillary Clinton and her emails. Look, factually and legally, there were significant differences. The fact that, you know, the FBI conducted a fulsome investigation and then came to the view that based on sort of really largely discretionary factors, that they weren't going to charge Clinton, I think is a potential resolution that we may see here. But of course, you know, politically, Trump really hammered Hillary Clinton on that investigation, used it to his benefit. It is the absolute height of irony that he's now under investigation for doing something even worse, potentially, than she did. Not in like a I'm wishing for this man's downfall kind of way, but truly in a, like just a cosmic literary sense. It is quite ironic and amusing. So yes, I mean, it hovers over this investigation in a sort of atmospheric way. But I think for the people at the Justice Department, it will be extremely important to them in terms of making sure that there is as much of a one-to-one relationship between how they conducted that investigation and this investigation. And I imagine Merrick Garland, being someone who's been a judge for 20 plus years, is going to be very, very attuned to that. It's something he talks about all the time, making sure people are treated equally.
Trump is no stranger to being investigated by a lot of folks. And he's been playing cat and mouse with federal investigators for years. Does this action, this search, change anything, move anything forward?
You know, there are several different kind of investigative streams involving Trump, even today, right? And I'm referring to whatever it is the Justice Department is doing concerning January 6th. We've had investigations all the way going back to Mueller, the couple of impeachments. And, you know, I'm not sure that this one is materially different just yet, but I kind of suspect that one of, if not the principal objective of the search last week was to retrieve the documents. I'm a little skeptical of the notion of a prosecution here.
Why are you skeptical?
You know, obviously, like the sort of the handling of sensitive government information by high level government officials is something that has been kicking around the public for a while, not just the Clinton investigation, but also Sandy Berger, who, you know, some people may remember like absconded with things from like in his socks at one point, and then he paid a fine and that went away. General Petraeus, who gave classified information to a woman he was having you know, a sexual relationship with so that she could write a book, that pled out in a misdemeanor form. He didn't serve any actual prison time. And so like, I think a lot of people are looking at the four corners of the statutes that are at issue. And that's certainly one significant part of the analysis, obviously, which is like, what do the statutes prohibit? But then there's also this other body of kind of government practice, things like, you know, was this intentional or inadvertent? Is it particularly bad material and material that he shouldn't have sort of a personal interest in maintaining? And those are the things I think that the government is just sort of necessarily going to be looking at, and that we don't have really much insight into at the moment. I mean, obviously, you know, we got this inventory of what was taken from Mar-a-Lago, but it was very, very high level and pretty vague, as these things tend to be.
Now might be a good time to perhaps go through how many open cases there are against Trump. Can you briefly run through them?
So, okay, so at the federal level, we now have this documents issue that precipitated the Mar-a-Lago search. There's also what we know that the government is doing, the federal government is doing with respect to January 6th. And I say what we know, but that's been, of course, a bit of a moving target in terms of whether and to what extent that they've really been pursuing Trump himself aggressively as opposed to sort of people around him or low-level rioters. But we do know that there is an investigation concerning January 6th being conducted by the Justice Department, and has picked up steam in the last few weeks. I think it's been sort of maybe affected to some extent by the hearings that we had over the summer. But that's sort of another sort of aspect of the federal investigation that has some relevance to Trump. And then you have like these other investigations, which are at the local level of varying degrees. There's still, as far as I know, there's an active actual investigation being conducted by the Westchester County District Attorney's Office into whether Trump misled local tax authorities about the value of a golf property there. There has been the New York Manhattan DA's investigation of the Trump Organization and his finances. But otherwise, there was reporting from earlier this year indicating that the newly elected Manhattan DA had decided not to charge Trump for the time being. So it looks like that one is of lesser concern to Trump in the near term. And then we have the Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney's Office investigating some combination of Trump's call to the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and the efforts to sort of create alternate or quote unquote fake slates of electors in the state.
Now, we know that he did plead the Fifth Amendment on one of these cases recently. So how much does that matter?
He pled the Fifth in the civil investigation that's being conducted by the New York Attorney General's office. They deposed Trump last week. He took the Fifth sort of hundreds of times. In terms of like the relevance to the criminal case by the DA's office, obviously he's invoked his Fifth, so that's not going to have any collateral negative effect on whatever remains of the criminal investigation by the DA's office. However, as it relates to the New York Attorney General's civil investigation, it's very useful to them because if they eventually sue the Trump Organization and or Trump and other people in the Trump Organization on some sort of theory of financial fraud, they can use Trump's invocation of the Fifth Amendment in a civil case in order to get an adverse inference from the juror about what he would say if he had actually testified. So it could be quite significant to the Attorney General in its civil case.
So how far along is the Department of Justice on these investigations and these other entities on all of these cases and investigations?
That's an excellent question. I think we kind of got to take them one piece at a time. So, you know, on the documents issue, it's a relatively new investigation, right? The first report that precipitated all of this scrutiny was back in January related to, you know, the National Archives retrieving the boxes. Then there was a grand jury investigation sometime in the spring. And then as we've seen from this reporting over the summer, really in parallel with the January 6th hearings, there was back and forth with the Justice Department and Trump's lawyers. I would not assume that they will see anything in the way of charging decisions, if they're ever in real charging decisions anytime soon in that one. With respect to the January 6th investigation being conducted by the Justice Department, I mean, that one remains a bit of a mystery. Obviously, they have 800 plus cases relating to the rioters, but in terms of the Justice Department's focus beyond the rioters, you know, for the most part, it seems that the department moved a little slowly last year in terms of scrutinizing the conduct of people in the Trump White House and his campaign, but that at some point late last year, they decided to focus in particular on this sort of alternate slates of electors issue. As for New York, as I mentioned, on the criminal side in the DA's office, for the time being, it's effectively dormant as to Trump. That could change, but for the moment, he should be feeling pretty good about the status of that. Let me put it that way, if I were him or his lawyer. As for the civil investigation the New York Attorney General's office is conducting, it does look like they're getting closer to filing a sort of significant civil lawsuit against the Trump Organization, alleging potential fraud on the part of the Trump Organization, potentially naming Trump and or his kids or other officers of the Trump Organization as defendants themselves.
So it sounds like—
Last but not least—
there's another one I forgot.
Yeah, I was going to say, then you have the Fulton County investigation, right, that's going on in Georgia, where there's been quite a bit of investigative activity very recently, including subpoenas to all of these electors, subpoenas to Rudy Giuliani and to Lindsey Graham. There have been disputes that are getting resolved against these people as they're trying to fend off these subpoenas. But those disputes are still very much ongoing. And that one, too, is like a bit of a wild card because it does seem like that investigation is picking up steam and potentially reaching a point where they're going to make charging decisions. But there, too, like every other criminal investigation that's being, you know, anyone that we hope is competently conducted, a lot of it is outside of public view.
But it does sound like that one might be the fake electors one that would be the most likely to go to trial, perhaps, because they are, as you said, there's a lot of action on it.
Yes, I think that's a fair read of the situation to say, like, if among all of these, if you were kind of saying, well, which one do I think is kind of the most likely to return potential charges against Trump himself? I would tend to agree. It's probably that one. One of the reasons is this is a prosecutor who's operating outside of the bounds of kind of the standard Justice Department kind of, you know, protocols and bureaucracy, right? So she has the flexibility to move a little bit more differently than everyone else. She's also a political actor, right? She's politically elected, so she may have different incentive than some of the other folks. But I don't think that we should confuse that observation with the suggestion or conclusion that this is still a serious threat to Trump. And the reason why I say that is because obviously it's not going to be good if for some reason the Fulton County somehow decides that they're going to criminally charge Trump. However, it is not the same thing as the federal government criminally charging Trump, particularly if Trump decides that he wants to run for re-election. And I think, you know, if Trump is actually running for re-election, I think things are going to get very messy, both legally and politically, in turn, if there's ever an indictment, because there's something, at least to me, that intuitively seems sort of off about a local prosecutor being able to put an active presidential candidate potentially on trial in the middle of a campaign season, much less like somehow convicting him and imprisoning him before the election or after the election. So I think the practicalities here are going to start mattering if these cases progress in this way, in a way that people haven't really fully contemplated just yet. So I think when people are thinking, oh, Trump might even get indicted for this and that, if that comes to pass, depending on who does it, it may not achieve sort of the sort of outsized objectives or hopes that many people who dislike Trump have.
More after the break. I'm Mary C. Curtis, filling in for Mary Harris. The Department of Justice has made an effort to clear the air since the FBI searched the former president's home at Mar-a-Lago. But Ankush Kadore thinks federal prosecutors could do more to keep the public informed about this case, since it is so consequential, and since Trump and his allies have tried to spin the situation.
I would have liked to have seen a little bit more disclosure, if not about what precipitated the search, and I can imagine that's very, very sensitive, then about sort of the status of the investigation, and more to the point, really these other investigations and what, if anything, has been going on with them. Because I don't think it's been healthy, really, for the country to be in this situation for the last year and a half, where Justice Department is doing something that people to varying degrees and based on the reporting in real time have been speculating about over the last year and a half. And for this to just be lingering and hanging out in the air with everyone kind of doing their best to kind of peer into Merrick Garland's mind and kind of understand what's going on, I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's necessary. I kind of don't even think it's really appropriate at this point for us to be operating in the dark here.
Now, Attorney General Garland has cited federal law ethical obligations that prevent him from sharing too much about the search and about so much that's going on. Does that explanation have merit?
Yeah, it has some merit. It doesn't. None of those restrictions prohibit the sort of disclosure I'm talking about. The Justice Department has a media policy that says they generally do not comment on ongoing investigations. There is an explicit exception in that policy if there's a basis or a reason to reassure the public that the Justice Department is investigating something. So just imagine, when there's a terrorist attack or there's a potentially like racially motivated hate crime, right? It's not unusual at all for the FBI or even the Justice Department itself to say, we are looking into this for potential X, Y, and Z reason. It doesn't obligate you to keep the public updated on every twist and turn, right? But it apprises the public that you are looking at something that has understandably attracted public attention. There are constraints on potential disclosures on the particulars of what's happening in an investigation and certain material that the government may have obtained. But again, those restrictions wouldn't prevent necessarily like sort of topical, sort of high-level disclosures that I have in mind. I think the notion that the government is somehow like fully constrained or prevented from commenting on an ongoing investigation is really overstated.
How so?
Well, first of all, Garland himself demonstrated in his press conference last week that it's not as true as many of the people who have been saying it would have you believe, right? So like we heard this for days, all Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, oh, he's not gonna, he can't comment, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, he can't. And he demonstrated one way in which he can, and one reason for which he can, which is to help to ameliorate public confusion being caused by Trump himself. Current and former prosecutors don't like talking about this, but let me just be very real about what prosecutors can and do when they have a case of public significance. If they charge someone, they'll often use a speaking indictment, which includes a lot of detail that is unnecessary to include in a charging document, detail that they include so that the public can have it. They hold press conferences, when there are charges filed, right? And they say a lot of things that are not in the indictment when those sorts of press conferences are held. Obviously, those are all post-charging disclosures. But even in the pre-charging stage, you know, not to be flip about it, but I don't know who everyone thinks is the senior government official with knowledge of the investigation, who is quoted in a lot of the news stories we have. Often these are coming, these sorts of disclosures, not always, but in significant cases, the Justice Department will brief reporters off the record or on background. I did it once when I was at the Justice Department. I conducted an on-background briefing with a reporter who was interested in writing about a significant investigation I was working on because I wanted that person to get the story right and because it was important to the department. I went through protocols to do it. The public affairs office was involved. A public affairs representative was on the call. So these things happen. That's just the reality of it. The government has more tools available to it than the typical like kind of say nothing mantra that I think a lot of people believe is like really, really sort of a strict rule. I mean, I think Garland kind of suggested, obviously, that he was seriously constrained, but he did leave room open for further disclosures as the investigation proceeds.
Do you think that the Department of Justice under Biden wants to create that different tone, that they are content to leave some of these questions unanswered, even if that means some people will think and interpret that to mean inaction? Do you think that's just what their style is, that they want to do this intentionally?
Yeah. Yes. No, I think that's why, like, I don't think that their position is frivolous. I don't mean to suggest that. And it is kind of the norm, you know, a presumption that little, if anything, will be said about an ongoing investigation. It is sort of the norm. But like I said, in significant cases, and this is, you know, almost as significant as it gets, given the nature of, you know, given the person who we're talking about and the fact that he might be running for president again, I think it warrants the Justice Department thinking a bit more outside of the box. And I was heartened to see them do that last week, to be honest.
Yeah, I want to pitch it forward a bit. And you've talked a little bit about, you know, Trump not downplaying or distracting from all the exposure, using it to support his witch hunt narrative. So how does this play into a possible presidential run in 2024 for him politically and legally? And is there a universe in which this search and all of this renewed attention on Trump is good for him?
Politically, it's unclear, I think. I mean, certainly he acts as if he thinks it's helpful to him to be in an adversarial posture to the Justice Department. Whether he actually believes that or not is anyone's guess. Because the other aspect of his publicizing these investigations that has been maybe sort of less focused upon, that we've talked about it here, is that it serves not just a political purpose, it serves a legal purpose too, which is to complicate any efforts to pursue him, to potentially inhibit cooperating witnesses from coming forward, not in an obstruction type of way, but simply because, you know, if you're someone who maybe is on the bubble in terms of like, oh, do I have some information that's useful to federal authorities or that might incriminate President Trump, you're probably going to think twice about that if you think he might be the president again in 2024, or, you know, taking office in 2025, and that he can pardon anyone and everyone he wants to. So politically, I think it's unclear. People are posturing at a minimum as if it's helpful to him. Legally, the run is very useful to him. I mean, if you are under any sort of, or in the vicinity of any sort of federal criminal investigation, and you have even like a fairly, you see yourself as having a fairly low probability of ever getting charged, and you had a realistic chance of being able to stop the investigation by replacing the attorney general in a couple of years, you need to think very seriously about exercising that option among the other potential legal tools and defenses you might have available. That sounds pretty awful when I say it like that to many people, I'm sure, but it is the reality. I mean, he is potentially putting himself in a position to obtain the most potent legal tool imaginable to fend off, potentially shut down, whatever, any kind of criminal investigation that may be ongoing as of the end of 2024. You know, simply running, that can exert its own effect, not just on the politics and the media coverage, but even on potential legal developments, right? During the Mueller investigation, Trump, you know, was fond of quote unquote dangling pardons. He's going to be able to do that again if he runs.
It may sound awful to some, but it also sounds like a smart play.
It's the smart legal strategy to be seriously contemplating. He has to, and I'm sure he is.
Ankush Kardori is a former federal prosecutor who specialized in financial fraud. He's a contributing writer for New York Magazine's Intelligencer and a contributing editor at Politico Magazine. That's the show. What Next is produced by Madeline Ducharme, Carmel Delshad, Elena Schwartz, and Mary Wilson, with help from Anna Rubinova, Jarrett Downing, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery and Joanne Levine. And filling in this week for Mary Harris, I'm Mary C. Curtis, columnist for Roll Call and host of its Equal Time podcast. I'll catch you back in this feed tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.